for members only. Golf Smarter number 393, published on July 16, 2013.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Ragging on the USGA and better bunker play. Part two with Ken Doherty.
This is Golf Smarter.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter for members only, Ken.
Thank you.
And thank you again. Recently, in the immediate past, the U.S. Open this year, USGA gets their hands on a golf course, and it doesn't play like any tournament for the rest of the year. The USGA, it's not a PGA Tour event, right? It's a USGA event.
Mm-hmm.
I've always, and this year was a perfect example how thick the rough, it doesn't have to be a long course. Long courses play into the hands of these tour players who are hitting the ball 300.
That's the MO for the USGA, to make high roughs and fast greens and tight fairways and even the shortest of golf courses, which Marion was said to be obsolete because of the length that people hit, and look what they did. And
they were talking about, if you look over the four previous times at Marion, it was the one plus six, even minus, and they were thinking it was going to be minus 12, minus 15.
Right.
The day before the event, everyone was
thinking
it was
amazed at, the USGA has an uncanny way of making the tournament end at right about even par, the winner being even.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and they're one over, and that's exactly what they somehow are able to set it up to. It's incredible.
Now, is that good for golf?
Yeah, I do. But I don't know about every single event, but every single event isn't like that. That's a unique event. Just like there's a few of them out there, like the Masters, there's unique events, and that's one of them. And I think everybody looks forward to seeing that type of golf once in a while.
Well, I think from my perspective, it's, I do that as well.
I
love
that
seeing,
as much.
Yeah, I love seeing guys screw up because, like, okay, they're not superhuman. They're just like us. That golf course, I'd never even be able to break 100, you know. But it's amazing how they can trick out the course to be so it ends the weekend at even par.
Yep.
We'll win it. It's remarkable. But so it kind of falls in line with I've always thought about the USGA is they're an advocate for the golf course, not the golfer.
Mm-hmm.
And
the PGA is for the golfer.
And when I talk about the golfer, I'm talking about us. Okay,
yeah.
And
well,
when
lot,
they talk
programs,
about growing the game,
there's a lot of programs going out
it.
Like Play It Forward.
Yeah, which
like
we've
that.
Talked to Barney Adams about that, who was one of the inventors of that.
Yeah.
And I Play It Forward's a terrible name because it doesn't make any sense to what they're trying to accomplish, I think. And so Barney, it was great to have Barney on the show because he was able to explain what it was all about. Mm-hmm. And it's a great idea. I don't know. I mean,
the pace of play is a big thing now.
Right. So, and I thought, personally, I thought that commercial was rather insulting. While I'm still young.
Really?
I didn't like it. I thought it had attitude to it. And I completely understand the idea of, come on, you know, you got to pick up the pace of play. That's not gonna grow the game.
The idea is that it takes a long time to play a round of golf, and people don't have that time anymore. So we have to make sure that our once before 4 hour round, which was going towards 4.5 and longer, gets back to where it was and even shorter to appeal to the younger crowd. And, you know, how they did it, I don't know. I haven't heard anything negative until I sat here. I honestly didn't. I thought it was pretty cool. And when you run a golf course like I do, pace of play is an issue.
Huge issue.
It is. And so I didn't mind it because it really backed up what I have been doing for the last 6 months or so. And, you know, in the newsletter articles and talking about trying to get people, we switched our pace of play rule from 4:15 to 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what came right on the heels of that was the USGA and everyone. And
while I'm still young,
even Troon Golf, which is pushing their own agenda on pace of play. We're all working together to make this go faster. So,
And understandable. I did conversation JD Salinger from the Palms down in Southern California in La Quinta, and they have granted that their members have to be a 14 handicap or under to be able to become a member.
Wow!
But their golf course is 3 hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And we were playing, the guys I was with that day, we played poorly, and we still came in at that. We were blown away of how quickly it is. But
you say that, and we had very little pushback when we moved to 4 from 4:15, but yet everybody was able to do it.
Well, you guys have fivesomes out here all the time.
We do. But
does
they must
help?
Play in 4 hours.
Is that possible?
Sure,
these guys
do it all the time.
These guys are single-handed.
I wouldn't allow it if they did.
They're single handicapped. They've got to be.
No, not really. I mean, they're not high handicaps, but, you know, there's a lot of teens in there to play. But, you know, my job, all I care about, and they do allow fivesomes. When I first got here, I didn't really care for it because it hasn't been, I've never been a place that allowed it.
Yeah.
But my contention is it's pace of play. And if you can play in 4 hours, I'm good with it. And they do.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yep.
Well, the I brought this home specifically for you when I was down in La Quinta, but they have simple ways. They have a 16-point checklist here on simple ways to quicken pace of play. And some of them are, you know, ready golf. Come on. Of course.
Yeah.
Right. You know, there's simple things that everybody should understand and shouldn't be allowed on an 18-hole course if they aren't aware of these things. Go ahead and play the 9-hole down the street. That's fine if you're just starting to learn, and then someone will give you some lessons. One of the ones that I really love and I don't see enough is if you're driving a cart, drop the passenger off at their ball and then drive to your ball.
Yes.
As opposed to driving to their ball and waiting them for to hit.
And sometimes you could just drive and park in the middle of the two balls if they're close enough. You don't want both to walk 50 yards, but you can do that as well. Yeah, people tend to go to the one ball, sit, hit the ball, then they go to the other one, and there's so many things.
Or they'll hit and then wait for the other guy to hit, get in the cart, and come back and pick him up. Yeah. Excuse me, you can walk unless you have the blue flag on the back of your cart that says you're handicapped, which I'm amazed that you guys have handicapped golfers. How just seniors that are wheelchair bound? I mean,
if they've got a handicap placard for their car, they are eligible to get a handicap flag, and it allows them to drive a little closer.
Oh, I see. And that's the main difference is they can go close. All right. But sure, after you hit the ball, walk to the cart. Come on. So I brought this list for you to check this out.
Okay.
So we'll do that later. But so back to the USGA and being an advocate for the golf course, not the golfer, brings us to, I hope it's not a tired topic. I find it fascinating. But the extended putter, the long putter ruling that now seems the PGA is going to fight them. On this?
I haven't heard the latest on them. I know initially they said they weren't too happy about it. But I don't know where they'll go. I think I have my own opinion about the country club level. And I, you know, when a member comes up to me and he says that he will not be able to play if he takes the conventional putter, I have a problem with that. I mean, for the guy that's 65 and 70 years old.
You have a problem that the player won't be able to play, or you have a problem that they're telling him he won't be able to play?
I have a problem with him saying, with him not being able to play. If he has to go back to a conventional putter and he can't play, I have a problem with that. I want him to use that long putter. I really do. He's not out to win the USGA. He's not out to win a major. I don't have any issue with it. I really don't. Now, there's going to be different levels, too.
Now, of course, they're not outruling the putter. They're outruling how you hold the putter, right?
Yeah, that's true.
You can still use it, but you just can't have it anchored against you. The anchored putting.
Yeah.
You can't have it anchored against your body.
And
I think
they're
going to.
And I think that's where they're going. They're going against the arm. And I think that's where it's all going to go. And I'll bet you see as much success as the anchored to the chest motion. I really do. Because I think the problem with most people is in their hands. And when you can put your arms into it, I think you're going to be a lot better. I really do.
Well, that's why I brought it up with you, is because running the golf program at a private club, especially in an area here where there's a lot of senior citizens, because they're, you know, retired World War II vets around here and retired cops and whatnot from San Francisco. But they're, you know, these are people who have physical limitations. So golf is difficult, but they still love it. I played a couple of weeks at Meadow Club, and there was a guy playing behind me, 93 years old. He walks the course 4 or 5 times a week.
Good for him.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, he walks slowly and he's hunched over, but he plays golf and he walks. I was so inspired. But you have clients, customers that have physical limitations and can't bend over that much on a very short club.
Right.
And I just like, why now are you creating an issue out of this, USGA? I mean, so
they've
you
been
had
around
five
for a long time. I don't know
30 years they've
now.
Been around, yeah. And five winners last year using anchored putters, yeah. And it's like, oh, well, we can't do that. So does that mean in 30 years from now they're going to go, you know what? Hybrids are illegal. You can't use them.
Yeah. I agree with you. I don't see the evidence that says that this is an overwhelming advantage. I really don't.
Yeah, I mean, because if you can't putt, you can't putt.
You know, and again, I think at the country club level, you'll probably see people that just want to have fun and they're going to use them. But maybe in your club championships or something, they will probably be.
Are you going to allow them in new? Yeah.
Oh, I think when it comes to that, they probably won't be allowed. If the USGA goes down that road, which they are, we will probably change as well in 2016.
And your feelings about bifurcation, a set of rules for the tour and a set of rules for everybody else?
I'd rather have them all be the same. I really would. I think they should all be the same.
Fascinating.
And again, I think that if you're going out to have fun and play and not an event, but if you're starting to compete, it's, you know, you don't want to compete at your club. And let's just say you're a person that likes to play in the U.S. amateur or, you know, the mid amateur and those PGA or local USGA events. Well, you certainly don't want to play by two separate set of rules.
Well, if you have a handicap,
yeah.
Right? If you have a GHIN, GIN number?
Yep.
So if you have a GIN number, you're competing. I mean, you can't.
We've got
that's
people
cheating.
We've got people with GIN numbers that are just going out there playing with their buddies every week.
Yeah.
You know, they can do whatever they want.
But they keep their number. I mean, I don't play competitively, yet I keep my number.
Yeah. Yeah, you should. And everybody that plays is going to have a GIN number if they want a handicap. Now, there's no secret that, you know, a lot of people go out and they give each other, you know, 3-foot putts. Well, that's not legit either.
Yeah, right.
But they've got handicaps, you know. So, I mean, I think you talk about two separate sets of rules. You know, you've got it right there. It doesn't have to just be with the equipment. I don't know if everybody plays, you know, in the mainstream plays by the rules as they are in the book. I just don't believe that.
Yeah. Now I want to go from the other extreme. So now we have the senior players who are worried about their anchored putters. I want to go to the other direction and talk about playing with your kids. And
it's nothing better.
Well, and there's nothing harder.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I got an email and the question was, I love this question. How many times per week should a 10-year-old practice? And I wrote back to him immediately and said, before I answer this question, you got to know, one, I'm not a PGA professional. I just ask a lot of questions and I have two sons. So I've been through that. And the other part of it is, what's your relationship with the 10-year-old? I couldn't tell just from that question. Was it the dad? Was it the coach? Was it the kid? Yeah. I mean, who is it?
Well, if it's the dad, I can tell you this. It's up to the kid.
And that's what I said.
Yeah.
Is as much as or little as he wants. The last thing you want. I mean, if he loves the game, that's great. Then let him do it. Because if you start pushing for a 10-year-old to start practicing multiple times per week,
I guarantee
that this kid will be gone before they get to high school.
Yep.
And may come back when they get older going, God, I was really good at golf and I just hated
it. It doesn't matter what you do. You want to do something that you both want to do together and enjoy each other. And I don't think any child, I mean, you know, my father made me go to church every single Sunday. I didn't want to go. You know, you want to do stuff that you want to enjoy together. And I think he's going to treat it just like I did church. You know, if you pull him out there all the time, he doesn't want to be there. Is he going to do it in his adult life? I don't know. That's
tough.
Yeah. I think that kids, when they're excited about going, boy, let them go as much as they want, you know,
right.
But I wouldn't push it on them. And that's the same with lessons, I think.
Well, my son, when he was young, he said it most succinctly. I want to do what I want to do when I want to do it.
Yeah, well, there
and
you
I said,
go.
So do I.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice to find something, though, that you and your kids can do together. It'd be great if it was golf. Maybe you tell your child, we got to pick one thing to do together. I don't care what it is. Yeah. Not every day, you know, maybe once a week or whatever it is. But
you've
got
to let
great.
Them contribute to that conversation
because
you can't go.
About
and
it.
So here are the things I like to do that I want you to you get excited about. Yeah. We can throw a frisbee. We can play golf.
Yeah.
Or we can go swimming. I don't know.
Oh, there's give and take. I mean, I've got a little kid, too. And I mean, sometimes you just got to get on the floor and play blocks with a kid,
right.
You know.
Well, and so one of my suggestions was to as much, obviously, as much as or as little as he wants, don't push it on him. I said, don't be his coach. Be his friend. Also, if you're going to do this and he takes lessons, let him teach you what he's learned.
Yeah.
And that one resonated with him a lot. And that's how I got started playing golf, because my younger one, when he was 12, he went and took a camp to play golf in the summer, and only went the one summer. But he came back, and the first thing they taught him was golf etiquette. So he said, can I show you what I learned? I'm like, this is great. So he took me out to the golf course and on the practice putting green, and he showed me the different etiquette that he was learning. I fell in love with the game. He got bored. Now he's you know, 15 years later, and he's like, why didn't you force me to play more golf? I would have been so much better, because now he's falling in love with the game.
He wouldn't have understood that as a child.
Yeah, it's like,
but you know, with your son telling you some things on how to do, how often do our kids at 10, 8, 12 teach us something that we don't know? And the thrill that that kid must have to show his dad something and know that his dad is learning from him, what a thrill that is.
Yeah, I think that's a real powerful one, because it puts the kid in a peer place with you, which is really important on the golf course, because the last thing you want to do on the golf course with your spouse or your kid is have comments for every shot they take. Mm-hmm. You don't do that with your playing partners. Why would you do that? And if you do that with your playing partners, they're going to lose you. They're going to divorce you real soon.
Yeah, my wife doesn't play hardly at all anymore, and she was pushed very hard by her father when she was young, and she played the amateur ranks and was very, very good, traveled the country, and hardly plays at all anymore. And it's because...
burnout.
It was burnout, and I think it's very important, no matter how much or how your child plays, you know, applaud them. I don't care if they shoot 90 and you thought they were going to shoot 80. If they tried, you know, that's the big thing. You've got to show your pride in them and show that you're proud that they gave it their all. And if we show disappointment that, oh, geez, I thought you were going to shoot 80, that's a lot harder on a kid and tougher on a kid than you think. You're putting a lot on that kid's shoulders. So the next time, he has tremendous pressure to please his parent, and that's not fair.
No. Well, there's always that pressure, and if it's the oldest kid especially. But there's always that pressure to try to please the parent.
And but we don't need to add to it.
No. Golf is supposed to be fun. Yeah. It is a game, supposedly. And, you know, they're not going to win the U.S. Open when they're 14 years old. So let it go.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it was really amazing how Earl Woods wouldn't let Tiger go pro. He made him stay in the amateur ranks for such a long time to hone his skills.
And he's an anomaly, that guy.
Yeah.
You know, if you think you're going to start your kid swinging at a year and a half and have him do what Tiger did, well, that's a pipe dream.
So, yeah. Well, there's
let things
a Tiger.
Fall into place.
Yeah. There's a Tiger, and there will be. When Tiger's long gone, there will be another one.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Jordan, LeBron James. You know, look at the separation between that.
Exactly.
They come around once in a lifetime if you're lucky, you know.
Yeah, and we're lucky to have witnessed what he's done in the last 15 years. We really are.
Yeah. And this year's been really interesting. And do you think he's ever going to win another major? That's two more shows.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he won so much earlier in the year, and I thought, oh, my God, here he goes. And, you know, you think the Masters is his. If he's going to win one, it's going to be the Masters. And he didn't. Had an unfortunate thing happen on 15. But I still think he's got
Friday,
to. He's
Friday
one of the best
15th.
Players in the world. He's got a very good chance of winning another major. And I think if he does win one more, then you can easily see, okay, that's off his back. Then you can win. It's like winning your first one. You win your first, the others tend to be a little easier. And I think he's kind of in that position now where because of all that what's happened, he's got to win the first one to be able to say,
get the monkey off his back.
He can win the other three to tie or beat Nicklaus.
Yeah,
you know?
It's winning the first one.
Sure. And that's going to be the hardest one for him.
Clearly.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Because the stars were aligned going to the Masters for him. They really were.
I mean, even winning the week 2 weeks before and his history of doing that.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So more about playing with your kid and what you can and can't do. Let them teach you.
Yeah.
And if they're just starting out, you know, I think a way of getting a kid to fall in love with the game is stay away from irons and woods. Just get them to putt. Get them to fall in love with putting the hole in the cup.
What age are you talking about? I mean, if you're 2 and 3 years old putting, I have a 4-year-old and he's got a putter, an iron, and a wood, and they're built. We bought them from a company that builds clubs.
Is that U.S. Kids Clubs?
It is U.S. Kids Clubs.
We need to talk about them.
Okay.
But you go ahead, finish your story, and then I'll insert.
Well, they're clubs built weight and length for the size of your kid. And, you know, I don't believe in cutting down a shaft and handing it to your kid. The weight is tremendous. The shaft is way too heavy and too stiff. So they've really done a great job in building clubs, and it's very easy. You measure the height of your kid, and boom, you just send off the set of clubs that coordinates with his height or her height. And so that's what we did. He goes out when he wants at this age. He's just thrilled to be out there with daddy and hitting the ball and saying he played golf with daddy, even though he only hit a few shots. And you kind of show them the basics, you know, maybe try to hold it with two hands, and the right hand is lower if you're right-handed. You don't get, at 4 years old and that young, you don't get too detailed in the Varden grip and the overlap. And, you know, you try to get them to take a full swing and do the basics, maybe balance at the end. And then as they get older, it really is up to the child. You get some that can handle some instructions and others that don't. So it's on an individual basis.
Now tell me about the U.S. Kids Club program. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought they had a program that you can upgrade the clubs or trade them in as the kid gets older.
I don't know that. That would be really nice if they have that, because obviously our kids are growing up and they're only going to use their clubs for a year and maybe two, but it's usually about the summertime or young. Yeah, that would be good to look into. But they're color coordinated, so it's real simple. You got a kid that's 55 inches tall. You look at the chart. Okay, he's got the green or whatever color that is, and it's kind of nice. They can hand them right down to their younger brother, and they also make them in colors so that you get dark green for the boys, and that same height, lime green, is for girls. So they color coordinate red for boys, pink for girls. So it's kind of nice. They've got it. They really do.
Yeah, and it really is, if you want your kids to learn to play, to love it, and not get completely frustrated, which they're going to anyway if they're going to play golf, that to get clubs that really are
for
kids.
You cannot give them something that feels like a jackhammer, you know what I mean, or a sledgehammer. You just can't. That's going to take away. It's going to be so much tougher for them to learn. Give them something that's light and easy, and if you want your kids to play golf, that's what you should do. Get them a set of clubs that fits them. And they're not that expensive. They really aren't.
No, they're not. I mean, in the big scheme of things,
sacrifice
one round of golf.
I think they do a very good, they have a very good price point.
Yeah, yeah. And now, as a country club guy, and it's a different world for me. I'm still learning about it and trying to figure it out. I don't see guys with their kids walking the golf course. I'll see, I guess, some high school kids who are, you know, playing, and they're out here practicing, and they're walking, and they're carrying their bag, which is wonderful. But I'm seeing little kids driving golf carts, and it's like, come on. This is supposed to be walking, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. That's the way the world has gone, though.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Hurry up.
Yeah. Well, pace of play could have something to do with it, but I think, more importantly, that's just the way of the world. I think that, more and more people are riding, and that is unfortunate. We have a pretty good junior program here, but all those kids walk, of course. It seems to me like a lot of the members that we have here, and, you know, it takes some money to join a country club. So you get to an age where the kids are now adults when you join the country club. So part of that is that reason you're not going to see as many, because we actually have a great membership now. It's really reduced and a great price to join, especially if you're under 40. It's unbelievable. Just missed it.
Yeah, kind of.
We have an unbelievable price for membership. So with that group, we have a lot of kids.
Well, that's what you're trying to build. That's the audience you're trying to...
That's the demographic we're going after, no question. We have a pool, we have tennis, and we're trying to grow that. And it's really growing fast, and we love it. Because the whole family's getting involved, not just in the pool and tennis, but golf.
And you have summer camp, don't you?
It's wonderful. Yeah, we got a summer camp, which started yesterday. It goes all summer and involves golf, tennis, pool activities, and so it's terrific.
Yeah, awesome. All right. Now, before we wrap this up, we've got about 10 minutes at least or so, but I would love to go back because your advice was so strong before when we were talking about irons on the last show and hitting irons versus hitting your woods. I know that bunker play is so frustrating for most people. They get very upset when they get in the bunker. You know, it's like, oh no, now it, you know, where you watch, you know, you're watching TV and you're saying, oh, they want to get into the bunker here because it's going to give them a better shot. But it's even harder, I think, on fairway bunkers. Is that a different game? Is fairway bunkers versus greenside bunkers, is that a different type of game?
Absolutely.
And
completely different.
Is the condition of those bunkers different?
Well, what you want is you want fairway bunkers to be fairly firm. Okay. You don't want them to be fluffy. So we actually will do whatever our superintendent and their grounds crew will do is whatever they can to make them more firm. And you can make the greenside bunkers a little fluffy, but they are two completely different shots. With the greenside, you're purposely trying to take a bunch of sand underneath that golf ball so that the ball comes out soft, because you take a lot of sand, the sand then hits the ball and then it comes out softly and not too far, so you can take a full swing and hit the ball 10 yards. The fairway bunker is very different. You don't want to take hardly any sand at all, but you have to be pretty precise, and it makes it difficult. One of the things you want to do in the fairway bunker is keep your head very, very still. When you get in there first, you want to put your feet and put them in the sand and get a firm footing, because you can't be sliding around. Then you're trying to keep your head very still. And one thing that I do now that has helped me a lot, I always had in my mind that I got to pick this clean. I got to pick this clean, you know, and you try to take as little sand as possible. And I found too often that I'd scull the ball or hit it way too thin, and I'd hit it into the bank or wouldn't get enough on it. So I remember one day I just got in there and I said, first of all, I want to choke down a little bit. So I'm going to go back to the shot itself. Okay. Put your feet down in there, get a good firm footing. So you're going to go down a half inch, an inch into the sand. So you had better choke down on the club, because that ball is now a little higher than your feet. So you should choke down about the same amount. Otherwise, you're going to hit a lot of fat shots or too much sand. So you're going to do that. You want to keep your head very still. Ball position is probably pretty much the same as you would on the grass shot. And here's where I started thinking, I'm just going to pretend that I'm swinging in the grass. Because in the grass, you want to hit ball and then dirt. Well, that's really what you want to do out of a fairway bunker. So my intent changed. Okay, we go back to my intent. Instead of trying to pick it clean and hit it real skinny up there, I've actually decided to hit it just like I would on the grass. And it has helped me a tremendous amount. It really has. I hit them much better. I don't scull them. I don't hit them fat. I hit them much more consistently.
And should you be considering a different club selection? Like, say if you're in a fairway bunker and you're 150 out and your 6-iron is your 150 club.
Add a club.
So you should
hit
your 5.
I mean, can you hit it just as far? Yeah, but more times than not, you're not going to hit it as far. I always take an extra club.
Good. So, yeah. Or
well, first of all, you're choking
smarter
down.
Don't try to be a hero. Yeah, well, you're in a fairway bunker. Just get out there and get yourself in the center of the fairway.
Exactly.
And then go ahead and hit your pro shot close to the pin.
It's not the first mistake that kills you. It's the second one. Your first mistake was getting in the bunker. Don't try to be a hero, because you're going to make a second mistake.
You know, it's like where the ball lands is not a mistake. It's contact.
But you've already put yourself into a tough situation.
Yes.
Why do something again that puts you in yet another tough situation? Because to me, that's where you start going into double and triple territory, when you start making your second mistake or get in trouble a second time in the hole.
So now stop trying to be a hero. Again, now we're coming to the basis of this whole program, which is, you know, golf smarter. Don't follow a bad shot with a stupid shot.
How about being in a fairway or a greenside bunker and you got that pin real close to the edge, and then you try to get what I call don't be cute. Don't try to be cute. Just get it on the green. We try to get it close, we leave it in the bunker because you're trying to hit that soft shot.
And I've noticed just right up here, you've got the greenside bunker on the right side of the green, and you're like 3 or 4 feet below the level of the green, and the green is going to slope away from you. And there's a big tuft of grass right above you that has the fescue poking around. And you're trying to, you know, like, be gentle with it.
And what
ends up happening, you decelerate on your swing, right?
You have to accelerate. And if you hit sand under the ball, you can swing as hard as you want. The ball's going to be on the green. You want to take a little bit more sand and swing a little harder? Go ahead. I mean, the thing that people do is the flag sticks, let's say 10 yards from them, 7 yards from them. It's very close. It's hard to get your mind to commit to a follow through, because you equate a follow through or any acceleration of your club head with a ball going a long ways. But if you hit sand, like I said, the sand softens the blow. It's the sand that hits the ball. So if you go too far, it's because you either haven't hit enough sand or you've hit no sand. So you've got to follow through, and you must hit sand before you hit the golf ball. The sand an inch or two before.
Change your intent.
Intent. So your intent needs to be in a greenside bunker to hit sand up on the green and follow through. If you do that, if you don't follow through, you're still in the bunker. If you don't hit sand, you're going over the green. So you've got to do both. Follow through and hit sand, and you'll be on that green. And I promise, if you go to a practice area, and you think...
Red flag. Yeah. Practice?
Yeah, I know.
Practice bunkers?
If you go to a practice bunker and just say, okay, I'm going to put a bunch of golf balls down, and all I'm going to do is take full swings and hit a bunch of sand up on the green. Watch your ball float up on the green every time. But if you get up there and say, oh boy, I got to get it over this lip, or I got to do this, or I got to do this, forget it. Your swing's going to change. Hit sand up on the green.
The thing that scares me away every single time is history. And that is, and you just skull it, and you blade it, and it just flies across the green.
There goes the head game. You got to live in the now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's hard, too. I know.
That's really hard.
I know it is. But you have to go back to square one, and what gets you out? Full swing or follow through and hit sand. If you don't follow through, you're not getting out. And most people think, you got to analyze, okay, I hit it too far. Why? Think about it. It wasn't that you swung too hard. It was that you didn't hit sand or didn't hit enough sand. And if people know that, they won't be afraid to follow through. It was the amount of sand they took.
Yeah. But there's also, again, and I'm just speaking from experience, the two things that also get in the way of success on greenside or fairway bunkers is death grip. It's like now you're concerned about the mistake you're going to make, so you squeeze a lot harder. You don't relax.
That can be said for
tension,
every shot.
The tension up on your shoulders and your fingers, everything. Relax and pace your tempo. I would assume that most people, their tempo changes when they're doing something like this.
There's no question about it. And so does the tension, like you said. I think if you swing every single time relaxed, you'll do well. And, you know, you can see it different ways. I mean, if you miss a putt and then put another putt down and you make it, why? Because it didn't count. You were relaxed. You let it go. You hit a second drive. You usually hit it very good. It's because it didn't mean anything. You let it go. You were free. And if you can somehow get your mind into a place that allows you to do that more often the first time, you'll play better. You will. It is absolutely a mind game. And your intent and what you're thinking about can drive your score.
Mm-hmm. Great tips. Thank you. Ken Doherty, head golf professional, Marin Country Club, a Troon. Preve? Is that what it is?
You got it. Troon Preve. It's a private club that Troon manages. Join one of those. You get to play all of them for a cart fee.
Wow.
It's a great deal.
It's a great deal.
Yeah.
And you give great advice. I really appreciate you stopping by. This is a lot of fun. And
I'm glad
I can knock on your door and say, come on over, let's do another one.
And I promise you, I want to see you in my studio. I want to give you a lesson.
Oh, God. Wow, only a few episodes left until we get to number 400. And in preparation, I've got some fun and interesting guests lined up. We're going to learn what the advantages are of being fitted at your local retailer versus a custom club maker. I'm headed to Portland, Oregon to have a face-to-face conversation with one of your favorites, Jim Waldron of the Balance Point Golf School. And while up there, I'm going to play 3 rounds at Bandon Dunes and hope to have at least one interview, hopefully a couple around that experience. But there's something else I'm very curious about. I've never done this before, but if you could request a rebroadcast of any of the 400 episodes of Golf Smarter, which would it be? Or who would you like to hear again? Or is there a specific teacher you'd like to hear again? Or for the first time? Just let me know. Click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.